The presentation today is about looking at the foundation of a multi-manager portfolio and then perhaps being able to leverage, and I don't mean in terms of lending, but in terms of exploiting the skill set that is currently available within a particular portfolio and getting more effective alpha or juice out of that portfolio. So what I'd like to do, first of all, is talk about potentially a new source of alpha. And I will define sort of alpha and beta. I mean, I'm certainly not going to get into autoregressive conditional heteroscedasticity at all. But I will talk a touch about alpha and beta. But really, the big question that we thought about 3 or 4 years ago was if we could actually get some skillful managers, we can combine them together, was there a possibility that if the skillful managers came up with the same answer about a particular stock, that is, they liked it, then was there more information in those common holdings than there might have been if just one of the skillful managers liked it, or maybe two of the skillful managers liked it? So what we're really talking about here is, are two skillful heads better than one, and are maybe three or four skillful heads even better than that? So what we're attempting to do is extract additional value out of the skillful managers that we're already employing. And then once we've got that information, we look at building a portfolio based on that additional information and then ideally being able to successfully implement that portfolio. Terminology to begin with. So alpha, so what we're thinking about here is excess return. I mean, if you're paying active management fees to anyone, you'd expect to be remunerated for that in terms of outperformance. So the way that I'm thinking about alpha or skill today is the manager's ability to get a bet right. And if you think about how an investment manager who's benchmarked against, say, the S&P ASX 300 can get a bet right, is if they like the stock, then they buy more of it that's in the benchmark, so they go overweight. Or if they don't like the stock, they either don't hold it or they're underweight it relative to the benchmark. So they can actually win two ways. They can be overweight a stock that they like that goes up more than the market, or they can be underweight or not holding a stock that goes down. Clearly they can be wrong. They can be underweight the stocks that outperform or overweight the stocks that underperform. But skill here we're thinking about in terms of the probability that the managers actually get their bets right. Beta is what they're trying to beat, so the market. I mean, for what it's worth, beta's pretty cheap. I mean, you can go buy a Vanguard index fund or an ETF and you shouldn't be paying a whole lot of money for it. I mean, that just gives you market exposure. Alpha, unfortunately, is not cheap. It's expensive, and it's probably getting a little more expensive because there's more people that are actually looking to actually find it. So it's not just traditional long only, it's the hedge funds, etc. as well. But I would argue that alpha is actually becoming more important in an environment where I think the last speaker was, or at least one of the commercials was talking about how many times had the Aussie equity market gone up more than 15% in 5 years. I think the answer was none. But we've all experienced decent returns both out of global equity markets and Aussie equity markets over the last 10 years really. And it's unlikely in our view that you'll continue to see that level of outperformance. And if you're a believer in that sort of trend, then alpha becomes important because the market's going to give you not as much as you used to get, but if you can find an investment manager that can actually add some value on top of it, economically that becomes a bigger proportion of your overall return than in a market where we've had a lot of return. So really the question is, from our perspective, are two heads better than one, or do too many cooks spoil the broth? And it's sort of like the bull case and the bear case for whether you believe that overlapping investment managers, being able to take advantage of that is either good or bad. And my belief, our belief at Russell, is two heads are better than one, but the heavy caveat on this is you want two smart heads, not two not-so-smart heads. And in fact, I'll demonstrate a little later, if we actually combine not so smart heads together, in fact, unskilled managers together, they're actually a really good reverse indicator of what to do. But in the process that we're thinking about, ideally the investment managers are skillful, and we think that there's a way to actually exploit that skill. And importantly, the outcome that we think is available is, if you think about just pure multi-manager investing, if you've got a manager that can guarantee you outperformance of 2% over a benchmark over the next year, and you've got another manager that can guarantee you exactly the same 2% over the next year, it doesn't matter whether you pick manager A or manager B, assuming they can both guarantee it, but if they're actually doing things differently, you end up getting the same return but lower risk, because what they're doing is if it is different, means that you get this benefit of diversification. So within this activity, we think that you get a similar sort of concept, whereas it's possible to get skillful managers that potentially could guarantee you the 2%, but if you actually look at the overlapping bets that they're taking, you might get an outcome which is greater than the sum of the parts, so you actually get an additional fillip. Just like with risk, you get an additional benefit of diversification. Here you're actually scaling up the excess return. So the bull case is basically, if I get three managers and they do different things, and that's the important concept here, they have to do different things. And when I say different things, they need to have different investment approaches. The bull case is, so I've found three skillful managers, so they demonstrated an ability to be able to outperform the benchmark. If there's one, a value manager, say, and a growth manager, and maybe a quant manager, so they're all skillful, but they've got different approaches, what happens if they all like BHP, for instance? So they all decide that the value manager thinks BHP is undervalued for whatever reason, the growth manager's looking at forecast earnings growth, and they think it's going to be undervalued, so they want to go overweight, and the quant manager's got some value stroke momentum screen, and they like BHP as well. So the bull case is, well, that's actually a super alpha stock, or a stock that the portfolio should really be more geared into in terms of having more exposure to. The bear case, of course, is, well, you've already got an overweight position to it. Why do you want someone else to actually just add something to something that you already know is good value? But really, the bull case, I think, wins out here. So what we're attempting to do, both in a simulated world and then in a real world, is see whether this actually works in practice. So just intuitively, when we go around and we talk to investment managers, one of the things that we want to see within their portfolio is, first of all, that they're actually having a go. So if they like a stock, they have that level of conviction in the represented in the portfolio. And I would like to think that most investment managers that liked a stock that were being benchmarked against, say, the S&P ASX 300, if they liked that stock, they would actually have an overweight position to it. So when you looked at their portfolio, if BHP was 7% and they liked it, they could be at 9 or 10 or whatever the number is. So does anyone disagree with that sort of concept? Because it's actually pretty important from the sort of the approach that we've taken, in terms of, if a manager likes a stock, they're not going to not hold it, or they're typically going to be overweight. One of the things we also looked at here was, well, what happens if a manager doesn't like a stock? Is that a good indication of selling it? And if lots of managers didn't like it, would that be a good opportunity to actually go short the stock? And what we found intuitively and empirically is that there's different reasons that managers may not hold stocks. So if a manager really likes the banks at the moment, and they have an option of National Australia Bank, Westpac, ANZ, St George, NAB, they may not want to hold all of them, so they may not, for instance, hold National Australia Bank. It's not because they don't like it, it's just because they like the other stocks more. So the trigger for us intuitively and empirically is, if a manager likes a stock, they demonstrate it by being overweight, but we don't want to take the reverse signal. So this is all about being overweight stocks, not underweight them. If we've got many skilled managers and they're each using these different processes, then hopefully this strengthens the signal. And if you think about the bets that we're taking here, if we have an investment manager that can guarantee us that they were 60% right in terms of their bets each year, and there was another manager that also could guarantee that they were 60% right, so they were skillful, they were getting more right than wrong. Remembering the right and wrong is being overweight stocks that are outperforming and underweight stocks that are underperforming. So in a simple example, if they've got 300 stocks in their benchmark, they're getting 180 of those positions right. So they're getting 120 wrong, the 40% that they're not getting right, where they might be underweight stocks that have outperformed or overweight stocks that have underperformed. But if they're 60% right all of the time, then they're getting 180 bets right within the position, within the portfolio. So we think that if you can get two managers that are skillful, that are getting it more right than wrong, and then you look at the overlapping positions, then you end up with those overlapping positions, the probability of them being right is actually more than 60%. So it's sort of like a conditional probability. And I'm not going to get into the technical side of it, but one of the things that Granold and Kahn came up with, I think in about 2000, was what they call this natural law of active management. And it basically says for active managers to add value, they need skill. And the way they define skill is something called an information coefficient, but it's basically how good they are at forecasting. The second thing they need is obviously breadth, so they need to be able to implement that, or at least apply that skill over a broad opportunity set. And there's also the ability to actually implement the positions. But in terms of the skill, the information coefficient, a guy called Sorensen actually took this one step further, and he basically derived an equation that proved that if you had two skillful managers, that if they were doing different things, so if they're doing exactly the same thing, so exactly the same positions in their portfolio, then there's obviously no benefit. But if they're not doing exactly the same things, then the sum of the parts is actually better than the individuals. So you're actually creating a bit of alpha, but why don't I put that into practice? So the history of the idea at Russell, at least, was back in 2003, a guy called Steve Wiltshire, who was running, or is running, is CIO for our European business, had this idea that maybe if managers like stocks, and they demonstrated that by being overweight, then there's more information in them. So what he did was went out and he looked at common holdings in our multi-manager portfolios, and what he found is where stocks were popular, where managers actually held overweight positions in them, those stocks did better than the other stocks in the portfolio. We didn't create a fund on the back of that, but we took that research to the US and we found the same thing. So within our multi-manager US equity markets, where managers had common overweights, if we build a portfolio of those overweight positions, we ended up having a portfolio that outperformed not only the benchmark, but the underlying fund as well. And subsequent to that, we've rolled it out in the UK and Australia as well. Interestingly, while we were thinking about this, there were other academics that were also thinking about it. There was a guy called Wermer in the US that was looking at something similar. A guy called Dave Gallagher in Australia wrote a paper about common overweights in Aussie equity managers. And then outside of that, there was a political scientist called Dodd, and he ended up having this idea that this wisdom of crowds concept, where if you had diversity within a particular decision-making body, where the diversity had a bit of skill, then again the outcome, the decisions that they actually came up with, were better than any of the individual decisions that we're actually making. So it's a very similar concept to what we're talking about from an investment perspective. If you're already invested in a multi-manager portfolio, you're sort of taking advantage of this to a degree anyway. So what happens is if we've got five managers in an Aussie equity portfolio and three of them like National Australia Bank, then you're doubling up the bets effectively, so they're all overweight and you get that incremental position. On the other hand, if the managers actually disagree on a particular bet, even if they're skillful, then you're neutralizing some of those positions. So you're doubling up where they agree already within a multi-manager portfolio, and where they disagree, you're actually mitigating the size of those active positions. So what we want to know is whether skillful managers that agree more likely are likely to be right, and I'll move into a simulation of that, whether multi-managers who have high skill actually do better than the underlying managers. So just as within a multi-manager framework, you can actually decrease risk by actually having individual managers that are doing different things. So you get this diversification benefits. You get this diversification benefit of skillful managers coming to the same conclusion about a particular stock and actually creating a broader exposure to that. So what we thought about was, why don't we just build a multi-manager portfolio that was effectively on steroids? But just to illustrate this, does anyone, I must admit, I've got to declare, I don't know how to get onto these sort of sites, but Second Life and avatars and things like this. So this is a pretend world. So this is a world where we were able to create both a market with stock market outcomes, and then we could create, in this case, five different investment managers, and we could assign skill to them. So what we did was, so this is not real. This is just, I think the guy before was talking about Monte Carlo simulation. It's a similar sort of concept. So what we did was we invented a market that had 1,000 stocks in it. And we just had it equally weighted, so we just had, so every stock was the same weight within the portfolio. And over the time period, we said that the market did 10%. And the distribution of the outcomes for those that are technical was like normally distributed, so we had some stocks in that market that did more, some that did less, and for those that are really into it, the standard deviation of that was like 10 as well. So we basically had a normal distribution for outcomes of returns. So then we needed to create managers that could actually play in this market. And we created five of them. So we've effectively got now five investment managers, and we use the same five managers. And the first time around we said, you are actually good investment managers. You're skillful. And in fact, the skill that we assigned to them was that on average, you get 60% of your bets right. So remembering the bets that they can get right are either to be overweight stocks that outperform. So in this case, the market goes up 10%. So we randomly generated a set of returns for the market that has a mean of 10 and a standard deviation of 10. So we've got whatever the outcomes are. And we've said for these individual managers, you have a skill set that on average, so they've actually got a normal distribution assigned to them as well, that on average you're going to do better than the market 60% of the time. So you're going to be overweight stocks that outperform, underweight stocks that underperform 60% of the time, and 40% of the time you got it wrong. For the skilled managers, for the unskilled managers, we said you only get it right 40% of the time. So we've created effectively five managers that are contributing to a multi-manager portfolio. And then what we do is we see if the skillful managers agree with each other, what's the return, well, what's the likelihood of them actually getting the bet right? So what happens over here, this line is all skillful managers. So 60% of the time, these guys are getting it right. If only one of those managers takes a position, say they want to be overweight a particular stock. If there's only one of them, so four of the other skillful managers disagree, then there's only a 25% chance that that stock, this is, remember this is being simulated over and over, actually outperforms. So he might think it's a good, or she might think it's a good idea, but the four other skillful managers don't. So they're either not underweight the stock or not overweight the stock, and they've alternate position, 25% of the time that bet doesn't win. If two skillful managers agree that it's a good idea to either be overweight a stock or underweight a stock, then the probability of that stock outperforming is 35% of the time, So, and the flip side of that is there's three skillful managers that don't think it's a good idea, so they've taken an opposite position. If we had a six-manager portfolio and we had three managers agreeing, three managers disagreeing, and we'd assigned skill of 60%, we would have had 50% chance, so they would have cancelled each other out. Once we get to three, four, and five, skillful managers thinking that a particular bet is a good way, so they're either overweight the stock or underweight the stock, they're right 65% of the time. If four of the skillful managers are there, then it's 75%, and it gets up to 89%. So in the virtual world, just using a whole lot of statistical techniques, that's what the outcomes are. On the flip side, because the important caveat here is you can't just grab any managers and put them together, you've got to actually have skillful ones, that if we have a whole lot of investment managers that are not very good at picking stocks, and in fact only get it right 45% of the time, if one of the managers without skill likes it and none of the other four managers do, for instance, then there's more likelihood that that manager is going to be right because the other managers have no skill or not much skill and they all agree with each other, so you've got the flip side, so it becomes a reverse indicator. But as you can see, if all the managers, as we move to the other way, as you build consensus, so you've got three managers here that actually don't have skill but agree with each other, the probability of them outperforming is less, so that stock outperforming is less, 42%, and vice versa. So you're getting the flip side of the equation. But the important thing here is, based just on empirical number crunching, where we can actually control the environment, theoretically, or intuitively I think it makes some sense, but when we actually apply it through a simulated sort of portfolio, you get the sort of answers that I would expect at least. But let's step away from the virtual world, from Second Life or whatever it is, to the real world and see what would actually happen. So here what we've done is we've looked at nine managers that we've liked in Aussie equity. So it's not like a data mine or anything like that. These are managers that we have exposure to in our parlance. They're buy ranked. And what we've got is we've had three managers that are value managers, three managers that are growth managers, and three managers that are, we'll just call them market orientated, so neither growth or value. And what we've said is, what would happen if we picked from those nine managers a six-manager multi-manager portfolio, and the only constraint we had on it was, first of all, that there were six managers, and secondly, that there were two value, two growth, and two market orientated. So if you do all the statistics, basically the number of combinations you can only come up with is 27. So there's 27 manager, hypothetical manager combinations. So what we're doing is we've had a subset, we've got a universe of nine managers, we've built 27 different multi-manager portfolios where each of those 27 have two value managers, two growth managers, and two market-oriented managers. Then what we did was, because we've got the underlying portfolio holdings for these particular managers, is we looked at the list of popular stocks. So in the six-manager portfolio, if all of those managers like the particular stock, then that would be really popular and that would basically go to the top of our buy list. If none of the managers liked the stock, then it was right at the very bottom. And what we find in practice, remembering when I'm describing like as they're overweight in their individual portfolios. So once we look at that short list, what we do is we basically buy the top 20 stocks based on how popular they are for each of these combinations. So there's 27, think of them as 27 multi-manager portfolios, each made up of six managers, and we've picked 20 of their most popular stocks for each of the 27 combinations. And then what we do is every month, obviously things change, so managers buy and sell stuff, they might go underweight to overweight or vice versa, we rebalance the portfolio. So what we come up with is sort of interesting. So the average of those six portfolios, the average excess return, and we're talking real returns here, so this is data that was actually being generated over the last 5.5 years, The average for the multi-manager portfolios, those 27 individual multi-manager portfolios picked by the, of the combination of the six managers, was 0.94. So the average of those was that. The average of the best ideas portfolio was 2.5, or close enough to. So what we're saying here is the average of the 27 multi-manager portfolios was you got a reasonable outcome. The average of the 20 stock portfolio that was being generated 27 times and then rolled through time was 2.4. Interestingly, the standard deviation of those portfolios, the 27 different portfolios, was 0.82, which basically means that 95% of the time, so we just times this number by 2, you would have got an outcome that was somewhere between 4% and 0.8 or thereabouts. What was also interesting was when we look at the average volatility or the tracking error of the particular multi-manager portfolios, for the multi-manager portfolios, the average tracking error was 1.5. So it was pretty low. So all we did was we had the 27 portfolios that had been created. We looked at them through time over the last 5.5 years, and average return, 0.94, average volatility or standard deviation, 1.5. For the best ideas portfolio, the volatility was significantly larger. So you can't always have your cake and eat it here, in the sense that you take more risk in terms of attempting to get more return, you get more volatility as well. But for those that look at things like information ratios, we can compare these two results by dividing the amount of excess return that we've actually generated by the volatility or the risk that we took in taking that particular position. So if we divide the 0.94 by the 1.5, we end up with that information ratio of 0.63. And the gentleman that was talking before was talking about efficient frontiers, and he had a whole lot of them up there. But the thing that I sort of noticed about efficient frontiers is they're convex, so they're basically curved. And what that means is it's actually easier to get high information ratios when you're not taking as much risk, but as you move further out the risk spectrum, if you believe the efficient frontier is convex, it actually gets harder. So this is actually a good outcome to be able to generate the same information ratio and have by having a much higher volatility portfolio is a good thing. So what that tells me, at least, and we're talking real numbers here, is there is actually some information. When we combine skillful managers, that's obviously an important caveat, if we can actually look at their common portfolio holdings, when the managers are doing different things, there's the ability to capitalize on that information and potentially take advantage of it. This is no magic panacea, though. What happens is, if the underlying managers are not creating value, so they're getting it wrong, like you just can't create value out of nothing. So in this sense, if you've picked unskillful managers, then you're stuffed, basically. And in fact, what happens is you're going to lose money quicker than you would have otherwise, basically, because you've got that sort of leverage in a sense of the underlying returns. But what we found in this case, when we looked at the average rolling returns, 12-month rolling returns of the multi-manager portfolio, just picked randomly, but based on a group of managers we thought were skillful, underperformed, outperformed, back to underperforming to a degree. When we compare that with the returns that we're getting from the best ideas portfolio, that concentrated 20-stock portfolio that was based on the popular stocks, when these guys underperform, so do they, typically by more. When they outperform, they often outperform by more as well. So it sounds relatively simple, but unfortunately there's a few issues in terms of being able to leverage this. The first and most important one is you need to find decent managers. So if you can't do that, you're sort of in trouble to a degree. The other thing is you want to find managers that are doing different things. So there's more information for when a value manager and a growth manager like the same stock than potentially when two value managers like it. So if you get that diversity, then you typically get more bang for your buck in terms of that overlap. One of the problems, of course, is that there's often an imperfect link between the bets that the managers take and the excess return forecast that they actually have. And what I mean by that is, in that bank example I used right at the beginning, a manager may actually like National Australia Bank, but they just like the other banks more, so they don't hold NAB, but they hold the other stocks, and that doesn't get picked up within this particular process. And finally, unfortunately, some managers might have really good research, but it just doesn't find that way into portfolio construction. So the level of conviction within their portfolios is not representative of the quality of the stock selection. So there are some issues there. And finally, that 20 stock portfolio that I sort of glossed over, it's a little more complicated than just actually picking the top 20 stocks. You've got to take into account average daily turnover and market impact and things like that as well. Our view, though, is without taking too much risk, this is actually potentially a good way of actually adding some incremental value based on what you've already got. If you're already in multi-manager, you're sort of getting this to a degree anyway. The select product that we've sort of come up with is like multi-manager to a degree on steroids, so you're just taking more risk. In terms of identifying skillful managers, and I suspect I'm talking to the converted, you just don't go out and pick the ones that have done the best over the last 12 months because that's normally a reverse indicator. And secondly, if you actually just pick all of those, they typically have something in common in terms of their process, so you're not getting the process diversification that you really want. So you need to base it on more than just performance. And then the outcome, we think, is a scaled-up version of multi-manager. No one else is doing this at the moment, which sort of surprises me to a degree, because there's been academic literature around for quite some time, and I think that there's two reasons for that. One is that they just haven't thought about it, but the second one is the next step is you've got to actually be able to convince investment managers that they want to be participating in part of this program, because it's a different model to the old model where you effectively are outsourcing both insight, so their skill, and implementation. What's happening here is we're outsourcing insight, but then we're actually taking that insight and effectively running a quant process over the top of it to try and leverage up more insight out of the underlying managers. As I mentioned before, best results definitely when it's complementary, and best ideas, we think they're pretty complex because it's actually hard to implement as well, but potentially rewarding. One of the things that we look at when we're building our portfolios is we think of risk in different ways. We want to typically position our portfolios so that we're exposed to risks that we think have the most likelihood of being paid off. And typically for Russell, that is, we don't like market timing. We don't really do any factor exposure, so we don't sort of swing from value to growth or small cap to large cap. But what we want to see represented in the portfolio is basically good old bottom-up stock selection. So we want that to be the main driver of the risk within our portfolio. So what was interesting from our perspective was we had a look at the risk profile of our core fund. And it's running a tracking error of about 1.5%. And the vast majority of that active risk, what we call the marginal contribution to active risk, is being driven by the green, which is the good old bottom-up stock selection. So when we created a multi-manager portfolio on steroids, what we wanted to see was that we were actually bulking up the risk that we thought was most likely to be rewarded. So when we did that, you can see that the risk goes up quite a bit from 1.4 to 3.7, but importantly from our perspective, the vast majority of that is coming from bottom-up stock selection. So we're not suddenly turning into a style timing fund or something like that. It's the consistency of the investment philosophy sort of remains there. I don't like putting these slides up, but the guys at the back told me I had to and they're waving. So this has only been going for a little while. And, I mean, to be fair, we'll be in trouble for this. I mean, we've done a lot of research on it and it's got out of the blocks the right way in terms of it's generated some pretty reasonable returns, particularly in an environment where It's been generally unfriendly for active managers, and I'm sure that you're experiencing that firsthand, particularly in the Aussie equity market. But the one thing that we're sort of happy with is that the fund has actually generated some okay returns, but what you can see is it's volatile. I mean, we're taking relatively concentrated positions within this multi-manager portfolio, and that is, by its nature, generating particularly big swings. So it's, I certainly wouldn't be advocating putting all your money into it, but in terms of those that run core satellites, then it's potentially something that, you might want to look at. So with that, I'm more than happy to open up for questions.